And if you own a business, this should be a pretty good episode because I'm going to take a question that we dealt with on our leadership meeting the other day, and I'm just going to run with it and kind of go with where we go, and I'm going to turn it into a podcast. And this concept is called repurposing content. And Jordan, my ice water is
on its way.
On its way. All right. So repurposing content is a form of leverage. Okay. So we're just casual right now, but here's what repurposing content is. Okay. I got this theory called work once, earn many times. So the idea of work once, if I was to draw it, it would look like this. So most of you can see, we'll just draw on the back of this. So work once goes like this. So give me 1 second. Here's the idea. You work once. And then I like, whoops. And then I like earn forever. Okay. So this is kind of the hourglass that I like to go by. And when someone asks me sometimes, okay, like there's been now again, this is for those of you who are not in business and, you know, like in business, we like to talk about dollars. Dollars are how we measure value. Dollars are how we count our impact in the marketplace. So for those of you that come on that are like more of my friends and stuff, it's weird to just talk about money, but entrepreneurs talk about money because that's our metric of value. That's how we judge how we're doing. That's how we judge our influence. That's how we judge it. So to my normal friends, and I have a bunch of normal friends that are like real world friends that probably are going to be like, Mark, you seem obsessed on money. And I actually had a I had a very dear, close person ask one of my kids, and this is a funny story, so I'll just share it real quick before we get into this, is they said, hey, does your dad have a relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ? Okay, this is really to my child, okay, to my young child. And my kid goes, yeah, like, what are you asking? And this person, well-meaning person, said, well, it seems like your dad talks a lot about money. And if he really loved God, he wouldn't talk about money so much. So my kid comes home and just is a little not thrown, not bewildered, nothing, but just kind of like not perplexed, but wanting to ask me about the situation, right? And so I'm going to keep this person totally anonymous to prevent any form of dishonor. But I said, okay, so let's say that person is an engineer, okay, which that person was not an engineer. Let's pretend they're an engineer. I say to my kid, I said, so if you were to ask them the same question and say, do you, because if I had a relationship with God, I wouldn't be so interested in money, right? Or I wouldn't talk about it so much. So I said, so let's just pretend that that person's an engineer. And if you said, do you have a relationship with God? And they would say, well, yeah. Well, if you had a relationship with God, why do you spend so much time engineering things? Right? So what I told my kids is I said, I teach entrepreneurs how to make money. I teach businesses how to make money. I teach myself as an experiment how to bring value to the world and receive money as a byproduct. Okay? And so the gist of it is, I say, the reason I talk about money a lot is because that is what I do. I teach people how to make money. When I get a consulting job, it's not so I can teach people anything but how to increase revenue and buyer experience. And so anyway, I'm just wasting time while people are on. So not enough people are on. We're going to get into the point. So here's what I said. We're going to record a podcast. So I'm going to go a little formal. But if you want to fire questions, I think I can see some of the questions on here, at least on the Mark or Shannon page I can. And so you guys can feel free to ask me questions. I got my water. And I'm going to set up the story. We're going to record this as a podcast. And here's the idea of repurposing content in a nutshell. This idea of work once, I'm going a little ADD on you. Work once is, hey, I'm going to work anyway. Okay, I want to work one time, but I want to earn forever. Here's what this means. I'm going to spend right now 27 to 45 minutes on a webinar. Okay, I'm going to work. I'm going to spend the same heat. I'm bringing the same energy if I had 25 people on this cam, but instead I'm repurposing it through this channel, which currently has 19, this channel, which currently has 10, this channel, which currently has 8, and the viewership between amongst all of them will cycle for the next little bit. Automation will trigger into my life. And so sometimes when I'm chilling with a friend, they say, what did you earn this week? And sometimes I'll show them. And sometimes it's a nice, big, fat, juicy number. And they say, but how is it possible that you would earn that much money? Because I've seen you this week. I've seen you golf this week. I know you didn't do this. I know you didn't do that. It didn't seem like you worked your face off this week. How is this possible? And I said, well, between my videos, and I can show them into Wistia, I can show them our ads, and I'll say, my face, it's called Android Earning, which is when the human spirit, I call it Android Earning, which is a copyright infringement on George Lucas, Stephen King, George Lucas, who invented the word Android? It's copyrighted. So anyway, Verizon pays, who made up Android? George Lucas, I think, regardless. That word is copyrighted, so I can't use the word Android Earning publicly, like in print. But I call it Android Earning, where the human spirit is working, but the human body is not. Okay? So my human spirit and body is being robotized right now, literally digitized, and it will work for hundreds of hours right now, even though the total time I'm going to spend is 45 minutes. It converts via replays. It converts because I'm repurposing this to my podcast, which then gets hundreds and hundreds of more views on top of these views. And it cycles and it goes viral. And so I work 45 minutes. And from this 45 minutes, I will be market facing, active with my spirit, working in the real marketplace. But just on this, I would say approximately 500 to 2,500 hours. Hours, 2,500 hours from a 45-minute experience. Send me some hearts. This is called automated income. This is the first time in history that we're able to leverage technology in the manner that we do to earn the kind of money that we do. And now when you start adding Facebook ads, where you can put Facebook ads, YouTube ads, you can actually start being consumed. So my stuff has been consumed over 1 million hours, 1 million hours. And the human body might just be going and doing other things. It might be on the golf course. Tonight, Diane Hockman. I'm going to try to talk her in to wine with Mark and Diane tonight. But anyway, Diane, who's a seven-figure earner, she's amazing. She's in Phoenix. She's in Scottsdale. She's coming over for some wine tonight. I'm going to try to trick her into doing a podcast, into doing a live together, because I think she's so fun. And we're going to do a wino Facebook Live, if she lets me, but she might not. But the gist of it is, I forgot about this channel down here, is while that's happening, this recording will be being watched over and over and over and over. This is called automated income. This is called leveraged income. It's called leveraged working. It's Android earning. Now, when you start factoring in 45 to 95 minute sales videos on top of this, this is just Facebook BS. This is just gravy. This isn't a lot of money to me. This is just market-facing value is what I'm attempting to do. But anyway, the idea of work once is you create a killer sales video. You put ads to that video, and you can earn for years. I made one video. It took me 3 days. It made me $1 million over the next year. I did nothing more. Nothing. I released it to my affiliates. I took a step back. I made $1 million bucks, 3 days of work. It's called automated income. If you don't have the 4-hour work week, go pick up the 4-hour work week. That is the Bible of this subject. It is a beautiful book. It's worth studying. People read it and they don't apply it. It's just like the Bible, you know, for us in my life anyway. But if you read and apply it, a lot of powerful things can happen. So moving on, I said we would spend a few minutes on magic wand questions that I would get into. So let's get into it. So there was a book, I think this is in Good to Great. Now, I'm about to show you a question, and I want to share that it's an okay question. I think it's actually kind of a dog shit question. I believe it's in Good to Great. One of our staff members brought it up. Here it is. And I want you to ask yourself this question. And this probably looks like Greek coming across to you, because I'm not sure this shows up properly for you. So I don't know how it shows up. On this screen, it shows up okay. What is standing in the way of becoming a better company? So one of our leaders asked this question. So when we do our leadership meetings, our masterminds, often everyone comes to the table with one idea to throw into the pot, and they spend a minute on each idea. So it's a personal development idea. It's a business growth idea. It's some kind of idea. And one of our leaders asked this question, what is standing in the way of becoming a better company? So I said, you know what? Let's work on this right now and ask ourselves this question. And here's what I found out. This question is so generic because it begs the question, what's better? This is jargon. What's standing in the way of becoming a better company? Number one, you're gonna find out your negative. What's standing in the way? So it's automatically negative looking instead of positive looking, which is okay. Sometimes that's okay. Of becoming a better company, what's a better company? That's a values question. It assumes so many things, so it's a shit question. So what we did was I said, this question sucks. I will never use this question with our company because it's bullshit. I said, here, let's go with this. Let's go with this question. Now here, I'm going to give you questions we are actively asking ourselves in our company, and that I actively have asked myself in our companies for years. And I'm not telling you that I have an ideal company. I am behind on my promises. I am behind on our projects. My companies are way messier than I want them to be. Our customer concierge experience is not even close to what I dream of. The Camelot vision I have and the reality that exists are two very murky things, and they do not look the same. Okay? Yet, we press on towards the goal of a beautiful company. Okay? And it's a commitment. And if you look at Elon Musk, you look at Apple, you look at Samsung, you look at any big company, they're messes and they're working on becoming beautiful, okay? Apple's last release of this iPhone 8 was a disaster. It was the lowest selling phone of all time. I'm not convinced it wasn't a joke ploy to make the X all the more exciting. I think it might have been manipulative. I actually do think there's a possibility that they did a cultural manipulation move by releasing that piece of shit phone, because it's got so many problems and the X is so much better that all the reviewers are psyching out over the X. I think they just manipulated culture on that personally, but I'm just guessing. I might be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But anyway, these are questions that are much better than what is standing in the way of becoming a better company, because a better company, what does that even mean? A better company? Who cares? All right, so here are questions that we ask ourselves. And if you own a business and you ask yourself these questions, you cannot resist becoming better in these areas, because we have a Hoverson code, and it's a Hoverson household code. And the very first code in the Hoverson house is the world speaks in jargon, the world speaks in principles, the world speaks in jargon. Hoverson speak in specificity. That is the number one rule. That is the first code of the Hoverson house that I teach the kids. It's written, it's typed. The world speaks in jargon, we speak in details. That is rule number one of our house. So when I ask, how was your day? That's a generic question. It deserves a generic answer. That's a shitty question. It's a generic question. So But if I ask it, the kids know they are not to reply generically. It was good. How was recess? It was good. They know to specifically answer. We played dodgeball. I was on Jacob's team. We were down a bunch of people and we rallied back and won. So here are specificity questions that we ask our companies, that we have our companies ask of our leaders, and that we're privately circulating in my mind all the time. And it makes us a better company. So here we go. Ready? If you're ready, don't do anything. Just be ready. First question is this one. What would make it inevitable for us to become a more viral company? What would make it inevitable for us to become a more viral company? Ask yourself that of your brand. What would make it inevitable for us to become a viral, more viral company? So we just asked that on our staff meeting. And let me give you a case in point, what we decided to do. So we mail out physical deliverables all the time. So this is our Solomon CEO. It's a physical box. It comes with a journal. It comes with a silver coin. It comes with this beautiful little quote on there. That's the proverb. Do you see a man who's diligent in the work? They'll lead amongst the kings. So here we have this beautiful physical deliverable. We have never, ever, ever made a request. Do you know two or three people who would love this Solomon CEO content? And Solomon CEO is about ancient principles for modern business. We've done $5 to $7 million. I haven't tracked it in years, so I don't know what we've done on this stuff. But we have never once put in the deliverable box of a $2,000 product, hey, we have a free 30-minute Solomon CEO primer experience. Because the odds that somebody who loves that content has a couple friends that would love that content is approximately 100%. So by asking ourselves not what's standing in the way of becoming a better company, we ask ourselves a teethy question. What would make it inevitable for us to become a more viral company? And the answer is asking to become more viral. And if we incentivize and we say, if you just log on and give the three email addresses of your buddies, we'll give you $50 in Planet Hoverson money, or we'll give you this free training, or we'll send you this pen, or we'll send you this t-shirt, or we'll send you this Solomon-related physical item. So what would make it inevitable for us to become more viral is a question that forces us to do what? Forces us to think more virally. So this is one example. What would make it inevitable for us to become more viral? That's one strategy to just say, hey, if you're loving this content, just asking. Just simply asking. We just, a lot of times you don't ask because you don't receive because you don't ask. So there's many ways we can approach this. The ultimate way to be more viral is to create great content to where the viewer goes, hey, you got to check this out. You got to check that product out. You got to check this program out. You got to play this game. That ultimate is to create a great experience for people. However, it's in the specific request and the incentivization of that request that virality happens. Because almost every penny that I have generated in the last 5 years has come through virality. I've spent less than probably, I'm not making this up, in 4 or 5 years, I've probably spent less than $2,000 on marketing. All my money comes from referrals, okay? It's because I ask myself questions like this. One of the cheapest things you can do is become viral. It's free advertising. And a word of mouth recommendation is about 100 times more valuable, about 100 times more valuable than a generic ad to a cold lead. Do you know the value of a viral lead? Do you know that your lifetime value of a buyer? Do you know how big that value is? It's colossal. One question. If you get value, throw a little heart or a little lovesy or a little something across the screen here. The Marcus Shannon page is blowing up. I appreciate that. Somebody's angry with that idea. That's interesting, but that's okay. So what would make it more inevitable for you to become viral? Create more viral content, ask for people to share, incentivize the share. And one of the secrets is money is not the greatest incentivizer. There's much better incentivizers than money. People think money is one of their top values. They actually have many values higher than money. And it's very important that you learn to play and work with those values, because they're actually higher values than money. So don't just say, hey, I'll pay you to be an affiliate. That's not what I'm talking about. So if you got value, lots of love over here. Thank you, guys. Another question. I'm going to burn through these. Okay, so what if you went from asking yourself the basic question, how do I make more money, right? Which is a common entrepreneurial question. How do I make more money? Okay, that's a lame question. It's a low rent question. Here's a much better question. Now, this is a deep question, but in the specificity comes the specificity. Your mind will Google search whatever you ask it to Google search. It will find whatever you want. If you're in a crisis and you ask yourself in your mind, why does this always happen to me? Your mind will cycle and find, here's why it always happens to you, because you do this and that and the other thing, and you deserve this because this is what happens. If you're in a crisis and you ask, what can I learn from this crisis? Your mind is going to find lessons to power you out of that crisis, because you're going to change your perspective on it. But anyway, here's a teethy question. It's a big one. This is one worth asking. It's a big one. What would make it inevitable for us to be a flagship company where we are asked to share our best practices at events like traffic and conversion, Brunson stuff, and that type of deal? So the question that we asked this week in our leadership meeting was, what would make it inevitable for me to be invited to Traffic and Conversion, which is an enormous Ryan Dice event, or a ClickFunnels massive event, and be asked, can you guys share your best practices with all our business owners? What would make that inevitable? Now, what you're doing by asking yourself that question is you are just opening up a possibility, and you're planting a seed for that kind of thing to happen. And I have asked questions that I have never even bothered trying to figure out the answers to, and the answer shows up. All of a sudden, I just get invited to Traffic and Conversion. I don't even try. Just by opening the question, that happens. Okay? I mean, that type of stuff happens a lot when you start asking yourself these type of questions. I'm serious. Like, many of you know this to be true. All right. So I'm not going to go into big details on that. I'm just going to ask you to ask yourself, what would make it inevitable for you to be invited? Or what would make it inevitable, if you're an affiliate marketer, to be asked to speak on stage at your next live event? What would make it inevitable for you to have 10 teammates walk across stage at your next event, crediting you as one of their leaders or one of their inspirational role models? If you don't ask yourself that question, you're less likely to have that kind of thing happen. So this is just a second question. Let me get to a third. Here's a great question to ask yourself. Okay, and I'll give you an exact answer for how we dealt with this one. So this question, the internet is a scourge of bad products. Okay? This is no surprise. This is not a big deal. We have a lot of bad products. We have a lot of companies that are impossible to get to their customer service. It's impossible to cancel. You pay $30 and you're charged $30 for 12 months in a row. You try to cancel. You can't cancel. There's no reachable customer service. It's just an absolute cluster. Okay, that is almost normal. So we ask ourselves this question. We asked ourselves this question this week, and this was the question. Can't read it in Greek. These cams can't read it. This one can. What would make it inevitable to become renowned for our client concierge experience? Okay, we ask ourselves that question, and we sat on it a little bit. What would make it inevitable to become renowned for our client concierge experience? Notice I don't call them customers, they're clients. Clients receive privilege. Customers pay money and walk out the door. Okay? I want our clients to feel like they're privileged to be clients, like they are given advantage by being a client, they're given benefit by being a client, there's benefits to being clients. So client concierge is a luxury term, concierge. And so what we immediately did with Jordan, are you watching this? Run in here quick, Jordan, if you're watching this somewhere. You may be bounced, but if you didn't, let me hear your footsteps racing over here, maybe. No? Okay, so I don't have the quote because I'm using all my machines right now, but let me try to find one real quick. So Jordan now replies. So we got Jordan, Matt, Tyler, and I didn't have Jaden do this, but we had three of our team members. Jordan, are you coming? All right, grab your phone real fast. I want you to read. Just grab your phone. Hurry up. Andale, andale, andale. Because I want to show teeth to what we did. Because what I want to do is I want to be not the average internet company. Because I think the average internet marketing company is horrible at customer service. I want to be renowned for it. So go to your standard reply. Okay? And the copy and paste, I want to read it and show it real quick.
On your congrats.
So Jordan, it's the one where if you have any questions and blah blah blah, and if you did anything, you
Yeah,
know,
I
like
did it. I did it on.
okay, andale, yeehaw, yeehaw. All right, so I'm going to show that specifically in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So this is what Jordan now replies to every person that reaches out to me on social media among every channel, and Matt and Tyler will be following suit. But we started with Jordan immediately. I immediately redid our customer service with him because he's one of our primary contact points for the market. And here's what it is. So you can see right here.
That's for the replay.
Okay, so I'm gonna read this. Okay, so he writes blah blah blah. Now at the end of replying to all the comments and personal messages that we get, okay, this is what he writes. This is at the tag. This is his tag on every single reply now. Every reply.
Yep.
Okay. So it's kind of like a PS. And it says, PS, thanks for your patronage to Planet Hoverson. This is my direct sell. If there is anything at all caps, anything at all, you wish to learn, comma, find out about, comma, get caught up with, or whatever concerning Mark's brands. Even if I don't know the immediate answer, I'll figure it out quickly. I'm here to serve you. Feel free to call, text, or leave a message anytime at his number. Okay? Now, Jordan, I did a better one after I started writing this, and it was deeper. And I said, even if you purchased a product and you lost your links, hit me up. We'll get you the links. Even if you have a physical deliverable coming and it seems like it's taking too long, hit me up. We'll find your links. Okay? So this is how the new one is. So this is my Jordan's direct sell. If there's anything at all you wish to learn, find out about, or get caught up, or whatever concerning your experience, or if you're waiting on a shipment, or if you feel it's been too long that you've been waiting for anything, or you purchased a product and you lost your links, or you bought something and want to get re-logged in, anything at all, hit me up. So we're going to have all our teammates have that as the tag, and we're going to focus on a client concierge experience that is best in class. Okay? Because I don't want to be normal, because normal doesn't pay well. Normal is 2-star. Normal is 2.5-star. The difference between 3-star and 5-star is not much. It's details on the little thing, and it's honor to the buyer. I will tell you the difference, and I've shared this in the past. You stay at a three-star hotel resort, ring, 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 call the front desk. Hello. You stay at a 5-star. Greetings, Mr. Hoverson. How may I serve you? That's the only difference, except I'm paying 5 times more for the greetings, Mr. Hoverson. How may I serve you? The buyer intimacy is what makes the cash. Okay? So anyway, that's a specific question. What would make it inevitable to become renowned for our client concierge experience? Okay, so this is a detailed question. And these are magic wands, because when you ask yourself these questions, you will, your mind automatically just opens possibilities. It just pops open bubbles and balloons of possibilities that float up. And I'm not kidding you, that sounds weird and bizarre. But as you just open ideas, all of a sudden, the realities can start manifesting for you. So let me show you a couple more. Here's another one. So for those of you that are just joining, the original question, which is in Good to Great, which I think is a really poor question, is what's standing in the way of us becoming a better company? So we were at the team meeting, and that question came along our way, and I said, that could not be a more generic question because it's a value question, and better has no meaning here. What's better mean? It's a value question. What's better mean? Does better mean everyone gets paid the same? Is that better? Well, then, or does better mean you reward high performers and not low performers? Does better mean more money? Does better mean more happiness? Does better mean more impact? What the hell is better? It's a terrible question. So we went and we spent about 25 minutes asking ourselves deeper questions and more teethy questions. So here's one of the questions. What would make it inevitable for us to become a more automated and elegant $12 million annual brand? Now, this is very specific. The idea is $1 million a month, okay? Now, I have the most I've ever taken a company under my ownership is to $950,000 in a month. So I have not made yet $1 million in a month consistently. I've made $1 million, or we've generated $1 million in a day, but that's a launch that we spend 45 days launching. We spend 1 week earning, and then we make, you know, a few $1 million, and then we spend the next few months fulfilling. So it sounds like we make $1 million in a day, and that's a big deal. It's really not. It's over the course of several months. And really, you're making 15 to 20% margin. So really, $1 million is $150,000. It's over 3 months, so it's really 50 grand a month. It's really not that exciting. But anyway, it sounds good, so I say it. And it is also true. But what would make it inevitable for us to be more automated and more elegant? $12 million annual brand. Just by asking that question, it causes us to think bigger. It causes us to think more automated, and it causes us to think more elegantly. I'm not going to go into details on this one. Time does not permit it. Now, here's another question. And I really like this one. This is a dominating one we've been asking ourselves for over a year. So many of you know that I was diagnosed with a terminal illness and was given a few months to live 4 years ago. Now, I still happen to be alive for some strange reason, and I keep staying alive for however long it is. But starting 4 years ago, we started asking ourselves this question about the Hoverson brands, which was this. This was 4 years ago we started asking this question. What would make it inevitable for us to become a legacy multi-generational company that has generational partners, employees, affiliates, aka kids of existing peeps, and also clients, kids of existing clients continue preferring our brand experiences and products? So this is a big question, but it's what would make it inevitable for the kids of our current buyers to want to prefer our brand next generation? That they actually are looking, and we are a preferred brand choice for their children. What would make that inevitable? So we're asking ourselves, what would make it inevitable? So through that question, the Lemonade Crusade got created. And we have served kids all over the world in an entrepreneur's pursuit of creating 4- and 5-star lemonade stands. Okay? And we fund them. We buy them. We give prizes. We give iPads. We give Kindle Fires, we give brand new Nikes, we give family feast meals, we give, now as it grows, I'm going to actually parlay the Lemonade Crusade into the Solomon Foundation, because right now we're just funding it out of pocket with no tax benefit, And so we're going to create a Solomon Foundation, which is a nonprofit, which is going to be bringing King Solomon's entrepreneurial wisdom to kids, adults, and seniors. And the idea is that we're going to have nonprofit funding, and this isn't going to the government to get grants and stuff. This is going to allow the Lemonade Crusade to where we can give away Disney tickets and round trip to Disney, and they can do a business school that's kid dominated through Disney and learn best practices. Can you imagine sending kids to Stanford Robot Camp? We're going to create an entrepreneurial camp because I've looked around and I haven't seen anything that's that impressive. But I want to create a network for our kids so that they can start meeting each other and build a network. My kids have made hundreds of dollars as entrepreneurs. Each of them have. Isaac is flipping right now. He's flipping what's the clothing brand Supreme. He's up like close to $300 now. And what we want to do is create a network of youth entrepreneurship. Okay. So anyway, but the point is, what we're saying is, what would make it inevitable to become generational? Right? That's the idea. So we want to stay fresh, and we want to stay hip, and we want to stay trend forward. We want to stay tech forward. So gamification, I'm telling you, in the next decade, if you don't have your content gamified, I just think it's going to be obsolete. I think it's going to be a joke. I don't think it's going to be even on the radar. And my buddy, Jeff Sherman, has a quote, that he doesn't read books, he does books. And doing books is gamification. So I think in the future, there's going to be a book that's going to include a game. I think you're going to see book prices go from $12, and you're going to see game prices. Like right now, there's games there's pure entertainment, amusement games. Amusement is a three-part word, A, against, anti, muse, thinking, meant, the act of. Amusement is against deep thinking, the act of not thinking. That's what amusement is, okay? I'm for amusement. There's times we need to, it's good for us to shut our brains off and stuff. But I love games that are amusing games, that make you think, that make you wonder, that make you dive into life. This is called reality gamification. I have a best-selling book. It's on Amazon. We currently pulled it. It's a bestseller, but we're re-releasing it with some extra content because now we have some really cool extra power to it. And so, hang on one second. My computer is spazzing out. But here's the thing. Gamification, kids love games. This question is partly how we're able to really lead the industry in gamification. Because I asked a better question. Your question is the magic wand over your business. How can I make more money? Oh, gosh, get a question. You don't need more money. You need better questions. Okay? So let me give you a couple more. And we'll get out of here. This is one that we started asking 4 years ago, too, when we thought I had 6 months to live. Okay? What would make it inevitable for us to become a less mark-dominated brand? Because right now, it's a pretty mark-dominated brand, right? I'm pretty clutch to the brand. What would make it inevitable for us to be less mark-dominated? So the last several years, I have gone way back in the business, and I've let young guys kind of run the companies. And last year, despite some really weird, rocky, topsy-turvy stuff, you know, the Hoverson ecosystem processed about $1.5 million. I was not that active in that brand. Now, to me, that's a victory versus if I'm sitting there working my face off, I'm doing everything, I'm answering every phone, I'm calling everything, I'm all doing the brand. Instead, because we asked a deeper question, how can you make this less mark dominated? We had Landon, we had Stapes, a bunch of great leaders showed up. Matt, Tyler, Jaden, so many powerful affiliates showed up, and I stepped way back, almost to hiding, because I'm like, guys, I'm supposed to die any day. let's see what you guys got. And they generated over $1.5 million. Not without me, that wouldn't be true. But I'm still here. Isn't this crazy? We're still here. And it's crazy. So you got to ask yourself the bigger, better question. Right? This will force you to become more automated. How can my company be a less me-dominated brand? Think about it. Okay. And we have another brand that's done tens and tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars, and I have never, ever closed a sale in that brand. And it's not even an online brand. Because we started asking ourselves bigger questions. Another question. I'm going to skip that one. This one's tricky. I'm going to end on that one. I'm going to share this one. Ooh, this one would be worth doing too. All right. I'm going to do two more and we're out of here. So this question is a touchy question. Okay? And thank you for all the love, especially on the Marcus Shannon page. I appreciate it a lot. This is a wise question to ask, particularly if you're not in network marketing. Okay? Network marketing and MLM gets a lot of hater hate. Okay? Sometimes I throw the stone, and I'm better off not. There's no point. It's an enormous industry. It is so valuable. It is so powerful. So we ask ourselves this question regularly. So none of my models are network. None of my models are multi-level. All my models are single level or no level. They're just a product purchase or there's a one-tier affiliate program. I do that on purpose because I stay out of a huge batch of regulation by having one level instead of two. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you're in the network marketing era. It's a totally different, 100% different legality field. I don't want to deal with it, okay? I personally just don't want to deal with it. So my business models are one-tier affiliate programs. So you sell a $2,000 product, you get a $1,000 commission. Like, that's my model. However, we ask ourselves this question regularly, and here it is. What are the very best strategies we can adapt from the magic of MLM companies? And I call it MLM magic. And there's something magical about MLM companies that other companies really could learn from. This is a multi-billion dollar niche. Billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions and billions. So what are the very best strategies we can adapt from the magic of network marketing companies, which is the virality, the buyer belief, the pride in product, the commitment to continue consuming the product, the commitment to share the product, the longevity of buyers. There's so much magic. Network marketing attracts some of the smartest people in our country. No questions asked, in my opinion. Okay, so that's the opener. Without adapting the negative stereotype associated with direct sales, which is that the only reason anyone buys this shit is to make money. Nobody's a real retail buyer. Okay, that's the negative stereotype. So we ask ourselves, how can we borrow the best practices from these companies? You know what they do? They do so brilliantly as they make hero platforms. Network marketing companies are gigantic hero platforms. Lisa Grossman taught me one of the best business secrets I've ever learned. It was many years ago. She said, Mark, if you want to know the power of network marketing, it's this. When was the last time an adult was cheered for and clapped for with standing ovation? I said, Lisa, I have no idea. They said, usually it's high school graduation. I said, what network marketing companies do is they provide a platform for a 45-year-old adoration-starved, achievement-starved, stay-at-home mom who doesn't get congratulations from her husband. Now, Lisa didn't go down into this much detail. But she said, we give a platform for people to walk across the stage and have adoration and have 15,000 people on their feet cheering for them. She said, no company on earth does that. We're the only niche on earth that stands and has people applaud the living crap out of people that haven't had applause for two decades. And they're starving. They're starving for it. You know, that stay-at-home mom, those kids, they're kind of young kids are kind of like all take, and they give love and hugs and stuff. But it's really where you're going to get an articulate thank you out of a kid, right? It's just hard to get it. It's hard for the kids to be like, Mom, amazing job with the laundry. What you do around the house is just, it's impeccable. How you entertain and you keep the PTA going and you do this. I mean, it's incredible. Great job. Here's an award. Kids aren't like designed to do that well. Husbands are usually caught up in their own little mess. And so here you are in a network marketing company. You move a few packs of the product and you're brought up in front of 10,000 people. You get to share your story and you hear radical applause. It's a hero platform. So I have taken that in all our products. We attempt to make our buyers and clients heroes. We reward them with prizes. We do social media stuff. We incentivize them with cash. We incentivize them with praise. We do all sorts of things. And incentives are how the world moves forward, okay? I'll get into that later. Now, here's the final question we ask ourselves. And it's a question that I wouldn't say I struggle with, because that would be way overstated. I do not struggle with this question, but I ask myself this question. I ponder on this question, and I want everybody who's in the direct response, instant response cult of instant response, because instant response, there's strategies of persuasion. You can use them for evil or good, and I really have no say on how you're going to use the strategies. I know for sure pirates have bought my stuff, and I have gotten messages from people that I really am not proud that they bought my stuff and used it to, I think, fleece people. I really do. I've seen it, and it was depressing for me for a while. I'm over it now. But I know they will take some of my marketing stuff, and they said, hey, you taught me how to do this stuff. Thank you. And I'm like, gosh, you sell a big pile of shit. I wish I didn't sell that to you. I wish you didn't buy that, because your buyers are big carcasses that just line up. The body count, you get the cash, the corpses line up and stack up. So, you know, but I've relieved myself of those gifts. But here's a question that I ask, that we ask regularly. I ask it in my mind. We dealt with it specifically on our staff meeting. Which is this: what would make it inevitable? What would make it inevitable to become the perfect hybrid of an ambitious instant response culture? An instant response culture is when you really seek to have an instant response to your message. So it's not branding like, oh, there's a nice commercial. I'll think about Nike's. Oh, look at that pretty Apple commercial. It's when you watch a commercial, you watch a piece of content, and you are automatically driven to action, instant response. It should really be called instant action, okay? Instant action. So there are instant action principles. The bright side, the sunshine of instant action, is when you know how to do it, you can type letters in your email, hit send, and instantly make money. Hit send. People read, they pay. Instant. Words into wealth. Type and grow rich. Okay? I have an eight-figure ad copy thing. It's called eight-figure ad copy. And I don't know if I sell it anymore, but I should, because it's a great course. But it's words into wealth. How do you turn your words into money? When I got started, I didn't want to be a best writing author. I wanted to be a best selling author. I wanted people to look at my words and buy things. Okay, so I made that a goal, and I focused on becoming a best seller writer instead of a best writing writer. And I can type an email and turn out thousands and thousands of dollars. It's really cool stuff. So here's what I said. I say, what would make it inevitable to become the hybrid of an ambitious instant response culture? Here's the dark side of instant response. If you're constantly instant responsing your list, if they don't, they can feel icky and guilty if they don't buy, and they can be like, it's too much pressure to encounter that brand because they're always just like, I feel the weight to buy. And if I don't buy, I feel like I'm walking away. Ah, right? And so it feels icky. And so they want to leave. Well, I want to be a multi-generational brand. So how do we create a perfect hybrid that's instant response and ambitiously so? Because the bright side is millions and millions and millions of dollars, which means millions and millions of dollars in development, millions of dollars in forward tech thinking, millions of dollars in better staff, millions and dollars of just dream fulfillment. There's so much benefit to millions and millions of dollars. It means your dreams can get funded way faster, way quicker, way better. Instant response is the secret mojo. It's the catnip on a business. Very few people bother to study it. Very few people, it's almost unhirable, because the guys that are really good in instant response have their own companies. They're not available for hire. You know what I'm saying? If they're making so much money, they don't want to be hired. They're doing it on their own. Why would they bother? So the really good killers aren't even for sale. You can't even find them. I get people who say, who should I hire for this campaign? I'm like, I don't know. I said, I'll tell you, the best guys have their own businesses, and they're not for hire. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell you. All I can tell you is become good at it yourself. But the dark side is you can be overly ambitious on that and create kind of a feeling where people don't want to associate, because they feel like the knives of you have to buy are in their face all the time. They don't want to feel that either. So it's complex. So I ask myself this question: what would make it inevitable to become the perfect hybrid of an ambitious instant response culture and an easy breezy, no pressure, no hassle, classy company? I want to be known as a classy company. I want to be known as a place that people feel pressure to do what they know they should do anyway, and we push them over the edge to make the decisions for their lives. That's the pressure. I don't mind applying pressure to somebody. But that pressure is to be a matching energy to their dreams. Like if somebody's the right buyer, but their procrastination's getting in the way and that's the only thing, we want to use every possible element of persuasion to help them make decisions. It's a leadership selling. In that sense, you're selling them on their bigger future. You're selling them on a better version of their life, right? So I want to be right in that kind of zero pressure, unless you know you should buy and you keep hanging around. I want to make sure you have every incentive and you have every advantage and you have every reason in the world to make a decision right now to buy, because it's better for you and you know it's better for you. I only want the pressure to hit on that person. The person that's not designed to buy, I don't want to feel any pressure. So we ask ourselves this question: how can we do this? I don't know the answer. I just know the question. And sometimes you just know the question. And you start with that. All right. Love you guys. Mark Overson, off.